As you might know, I love online courses. I can't get enough of them. I love talking about that. And that's why I was so excited about this week's guest on the Blissful Biz Show. I'm talking to Susie Clark, an amazing entrepreneur who's helping high achievers create online programs and launch them. And yeah, so she's sharing her predictions about online programs and what works in 2023. We talk about that. We also talk about her background, life in Bali, her journey, and other things. It was a really amazing conversation. Unfortunately, the internet in Bali was kind of not really working the best, so we turned off the cameras, so you can only listen to the audio, but I still hope you really enjoy our conversation. Hey there, welcome to the Blissful Biz podcast. I'm your host, Susanne Reicher, here to help yoga and wellness entrepreneurs build a thriving online business. If you're ready to make a bigger impact and earn money online, you are in the right place. Each week, you learn about websites, digital products, social media strategies, and what's working now to build your online business. And now let's get started. Hey, Susie, welcome to the Blissful Biz podcast. I'm so excited you're here.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, so can you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about what you do. What has your journey been like? Where did it lead?
Yeah, so I'm Susie. I'm the founder of Female Leadership Collective. As you can probably tell from my accent, I'm British, but I actually live in Bali and I've been here for the last 3 years. So in terms of my business, I help women start and scale online businesses, specifically in like the digital product space. So people like coaches, influencers, consultants, and it really is such a passion of mine, helping women grow their businesses. So I actually come from a corporate banking background. I used to work for the world's largest investment bank, and I'm sure we'll dive into this in a little bit more depth. But really, society viewed my job as one of the most impressive jobs you could get at the time. But and it was very glamorous and all of those things. But really, I went through this absolute meltdown when I realized this career just absolutely wasn't aligned with me. So long story short, years went by, but I got the courage to quit and book a one-way ticket out of the UK. And fast forward to today, I now run Female Leadership Collective, and I get the chance to help other women break free from their corporate careers and create freedom in their lives as well. So that's a little quick summary.
I love that. Thanks so much. So you've been in Bali before the pandemic already?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Oh my God, we could have met there. I left Bali March 2020. Yeah, I was planned that I went back to Germany for a few months, and then obviously life happened.
Maybe we did cross paths.
Who knows? Yeah, I was in Chengdu the last winter. Yeah,
that
winter
was. Yeah, that's where I live. How funny.
It must have been really interesting, the change then with the pandemic and, suddenly the island being completely in lockdown. And now I think it's crazy again, right?
Yeah, Bali has changed so much in the last 3 years. Obviously, I got here just before COVID was even a thing, and it was super busy back then. And it was so buzzy, so many people working remotely and people on holiday. And then obviously the pandemic hit, and honestly, it was just a ghost town. It was the local people really, really struggled, because obviously the island relies on tourism. And it really was such a ghost town. But I think around 6 months ago, they opened the airport, and there's more people here than there were before. I think Canggu is really having its time, and it's crazy. But at the same time, a lot of people complain about it, but I actually really love to see this energy. I love to see like the happiness that people have being able to travel again and all the joy and that kind of thing. I just don't love the traffic.
Oh, that was crazy, the traffic.
Yeah.
And that stupid shortcut, right?
Shortcut. Yeah, although they've repaved it, so it's actually really smooth now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
What I loved about Bali was that, or what I found really inspiring was that environment of entrepreneurs. That, I mean, you have like that spiritual side. I went to Bali first for yoga teacher training, and it's amazing, obviously, for that. But then I also liked it. Then I joined the co-working spaces, because it was back in 2016, even before that, 2015. The only place where you had good internet. So, and then suddenly it was like, oh my God, who are all those people? What are they doing? Oh my God, all those opportunities. And it just opened me up to see what's really possible today, because let's realize, like a few years ago before that, having an online business was something that was so exotic. Not really possible. And now it's like you meet people from all over the world doing amazing things in Bali. I love that about that place.
Yeah. Oh my God. I think, Suzanne, we have very similar stories. I came to Bali as soon as I quit my corporate job, and I did a yoga teacher training as well. And it wasn't really out of, well, I love yoga, but it wasn't really out of wanting to be a teacher. It was just I needed to do something different. Like I needed to just do something that felt a little bit crazy. And so I went and did a yoga teacher training on Nusa Lembongan. I'm not sure if you visited.
Yeah, of course I've been there,
Yeah, and then I did the same thing. I went to the dojo co-working space to just see what it was all about. Everybody kept telling me about this place. I didn't really know what it meant. And I saw all these people working from their laptops. And I was like, wow, it's a real thing when you actually see things in real life and when it can expand your perspective like that. And exactly the same as you, I just saw what was possible. And from that moment on, I was like, I need to have this life.
Yeah. I love it. And it's so easy to forget that when you are in that environment and it's so normal. Yeah. Everybody's doing that. And I don't know about you, but when I'm in Hamburg with my friends, like from, you know, like they just no idea what I'm doing, or my family. Yeah. They really don't understand it. And obviously, like a lot of my students or stuff working with me, they're maybe in the same situation. They don't really see the opportunities of what's possible.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And I think this is tricky because there's always that saying, isn't there? You can't be what you can't see. And the thing is, there's so many people out here doing this. And there's people in Bali from all over the world, which I think is just one of the most wonderful things about here, the community being so diverse. But for people at home who are in the cities, they really are in their own bubbles. And it is difficult to see what life is like out here. So yeah, definitely. That I'm actually running a retreat here in Bali in May for that very reason, called The Reset. And I've just basically built the retreat that I wish I had when I was back in corporate and I needed to see a way out, right, and be able to see examples of people who are living these lives and just learn from them. So yeah, it's a real challenge to see that when you're in your environment of the Western country and in the city in particular.
Yeah, because you have social media, but you know, that's different. It just doesn't feel as real, I think.
Exactly.
I love that idea of the retreat. Can you tell me more about that? What exactly is it going to look like?
Yeah, so basically at that time that I mentioned when I quit my corporate job, I was really looking for, I needed like a mixture of something exciting, like adventure, but also I needed a lot of healing because I'd been putting myself through a job for a long time that my body and my mind just didn't want to do. So I had a lot of healing work to do. And then at the same time, like I needed more wellness. I needed to improve my posture. I needed to like lose a little bit of weight because I'd put on so much in the tech company when I was unhappy and this kind of thing. And I just really needed this reset, basically. So I couldn't find anything at the time that was ideal for me. So I just went and did a yoga teacher training and it was really transformative and amazing. But I kind of feel that there's not, that there wasn't anything in the market for a woman coming from a high powered job who was making a change and needed all of those things like adventure, wellness, healing, business coaching and community. And so this is how I was like, right, well, I'm just going to make it myself. So I've created a week-long retreat in May called The Reset. It's going to be in Ubud and it's in a luxury villa. And this is the benefit, right, of being here. I just hopped on my scooter and went around and looked at some villas and I was like, this is the one. It's so beautiful. There's like waterfall in front of the infinity pool. Yeah, and I'm just so excited to bring women from all over the world to have this really special week.
I love that. It sounds amazing. Yes, definitely what I would have needed too. I mean, I wasn't working in finance, probably I was working in advertising. I was earning good money too.
Right. Yeah.
but yeah, sounds really great. So I thought about doing something, a retreat, a business building retreat here in Mallorca
later
in the year. So I thought I already knew that I didn't want to stay in Bali before the pandemic. So I was always thinking I'm going to settle down in the south of Europe. And so I've just been traveling around and I thought it would be Portugal. But then this winter, I don't know, it just didn't feel right. And then a very spur of the moment, I ended up in Mallorca. And right now I'm actually in an Airbnb because it's too cold for van life and there's not really infrastructure here on the island for camping. So but I can totally see myself living here.
Oh, that's wonderful. Actually, Mallorca is on my list for this year. It just, being in Asia for so long, obviously over the pandemic, has made me really appreciate Europe and the different cultures in all packed in this land that is Europe. And I kind of feel like growing up in the UK, I took it for granted a bit, you know, like we're so easy access to all these countries and all these cultures. And now being far away for the last 3 years, I'm like, that is amazing that there's all these languages, all these amazing cultures in such close proximity of each other. So
yeah,
definitely Europe trip on the cards this year.
I mean, I love Bali and I still miss it sometimes. Really, it's like so emotional, my connection to Bali too. But it's a crazy bubble that you live in as an expat, especially in Chengdu or Ubud. I think most people just think, okay, that's fine for a while. And then you also have a lot of people leaving all the time, arriving, right? So
yeah,
that stability really, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more about the beginning stages when you started your business? Were there any roadblocks or mental barriers at the start? Something that stands out?
Yeah, loads. So as most business owners experience, so I came to Bali and quit my corporate job with no kind of plan, knowledge of what I was going to do. I just really knew that I just had to do something different for my own like mental well-being. So when I got here, I tried various different things. So I did a lot of freelancing. I just kind of like took the odd job that I could take in terms of through people that I met. I then started an e-commerce brand. So I actually had an e-commerce brand called Frank and Iris, which was screen glasses. And I built this mission-led part of it where for every pair sold, we would donate $15 to charity to restore someone's sight. Because I was all about mission-led things. I was really thinking about, you know, when I create a business, I want it to be intentional and I want to feel the impact and the purpose of running it, which was something that was lacking in my corporate career. And so I did that for a while. I also got a remote job as well at the time. This was quite early on in the pandemic and there was a crypto startup hiring for someone to run their Asia sales and Asia client base. And so they hired me to do that. And I was like their 16th hire and it was a crazy job. I was just really just stuck in an air conditioned room every day on Slack. And I realized I was replicating my corporate career in Bali. And the thing is, I think for anyone listening, the learnings from this kind of thing is that people can paint the dream of being a digital nomad and working remotely, but there's so many different ways you can do that. You can freelance, you can run a business, you can have a remote job, but really it's not necessarily about where you're living. It's actually about the freedom that you have. So I think what I learned from that was actually freedom is made up of three things, like time, location, and financial freedom. And this remote job just was not giving me time freedom whatsoever. So I just ended up feeling the same as I did in my corporate job. So those are two of my failures. The e-commerce brand failed in the sense that it just wasn't, I mean, it didn't fail as such, but I realized that actually it just wasn't giving me enough fulfillment. So people would email me being like, wow, the glasses have stopped my headaches and thank you so much. But then that would be it. And I just really desired and craved more community and more longevity with my client base. So those are two failures, I would say. I ended up quitting the remote job after a year. I was like, I cannot do this. And at that point, I was like, right, I felt like I was at the beginning again. And I was like, what can I do now? So I jumped around kind of freelancing. And my background, by the way, is sales. I've been in sales for 10 years. And I was freelancing, helping lots of coaches, community builders, just with their copywriting, with their launches, with their selling. And I just kind of naturally fell into that and got a lot of clients through word of mouth. And just seeing their business models, I realized like, wow, this is so lucrative. And also just seeing the things that their clients would say to them around how they transformed their lives. I was like, that is the kind of impact I want to have in my own business. And I helped people have like 75K launches. And I was like, I should be doing this myself. Why am I not doing this myself? So then Female Leadership Collective was born. And I started with the podcast. So I have a podcast as well, which I just love doing podcasting. And it grew from there, really. So I guess the moral of the story is to quit things if you're not enjoying them, if they're not aligned, if they're not it, and continue the search, because that's the only way that you can find the dream business. Does that answer the question? That's quite a long-winded way, but definitely a lot of failures.
Well, I love that. And all, yeah, that you really, I was the same, right? And you just need time to experiment as well. And I think actually it never stops evolving what you do. So you can't wait until you have that perfect idea and strategy. You just need to take action and start living your dream, right? And I think the same is true for every business. And probably like in 5 years, our businesses are going to look completely different. Maybe not, but you know, probably. And I just love that about being an entrepreneur, that it's this always learning, always changing, always evolving.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think a big part of it as well is when you make a big change, like quitting a job or starting a business, it can be so easy to just look around at what everybody else is doing and think, oh, they made money quite fast. I'm just going to start that. I'm just going to do that, and kind of chase the money a little bit instead of taking confidence in the fact that like a lot of my community are like real high achievers and that come from like big kind of corporate jobs. And I say to them, you just take some confidence in that you made a success of pretty much anything you've done in your life. So you can pick any business and make a success of it. And obviously there's going to be challenges and ups and downs, but you might as well pick one that feels truly, truly aligned. Because I think when I think back to the start of this journey, I always wanted to be a mentor. I always wanted to be a coach. I always wanted to help people. But I think back then I kind of looked around and I just didn't have the confidence. And so I just copied what other people were doing. All these people making all this money in e-commerce and people, and then just took a remote job because it felt safe. And actually, you know, over that time, I got the confidence to start Female Leadership Collective and perhaps the experience. But at the same time, I think there's a lesson in that to just really channel into intuitively what is it that you want to do and what are the deep values that you have, and is the business model that you're choosing aligned and going to allow for that in your life? Because if not, then it's always going to feel difficult.
100%. Yeah. I think having a strong vision is going to be, it's so helpful. I think it's really difficult to build a business without that, because yeah, like getting out of your comfort zone again and again. And, maybe sometimes I don't believe really in the hustle, in having to work like really crazy hours and staying up at night and to getting things done. But of course, there are phases when you're building up a business where there's a little bit more hustle. And I think when you have a really strong vision, that's what keeps you going.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think specifically with this business model, so I help women create courses and group programs, and that's really my specialty. And with that specific business model, there is definitely phases. Like at the start, it is quite demanding, because the what you're doing is you're creating an asset. You're investing your time and money into creating this asset, which should reward you like for years to come. Like it's worth the investment of time, but it's kind of a phase that you can't really skip, and there's a lot of building to do, there's a lot of mindset to do, and a lot of identity shifting to do. So definitely there's phases in that specific business model, for sure.
I know, I've been there. When I started my business, like 2016, and the first years I was working so much and I didn't really see the return of investment, right? Because I had no audience, and I sold just low ticket courses. So don't do that. And then I was still freelancing for like 6 months, a year. I was like going back to Germany, freelance for a few months, go back to Bali. So I wasn't in any hurry to make money. So I think that was holding me back a little bit, but it's okay. But I also feel sometimes I'll have that thought, why do I do that to myself? I should just like freelance for 6 months and make enough money and then enjoy life in Bali for 6 months instead of sitting in the co-working space while it's a beautiful day inside in this air-conditioned dark room. Working on, I don't know, content for an online program. But because I had that vision, because I knew like there was so much more going to happen and it was going to evolve and grow so much more than staying as a freelancer, that would have been static, right? Yeah. There was no possibility to scale really, to grow. Yeah.
Yeah. The freelancer business model, because I help a lot of freelancers move into more of a scalable, like away from one-to-one, away from done for you to more scalable products like courses. But it's definitely limiting, that business model. But it's a great place to start and learn the trade and learn the skill and get some confidence and get some testimonials and that kind of thing, definitely. Mm. But if you want to then carve a life where you have more freedom, where you can work less over time, then something needs to shift in the business model, because a freelancer business model just it can't allow for that.
Yeah. 100%. So let's talk more about online courses. It's one of my favorite subjects as well. Yes. And I think so much has changed since I launched my first course 2016. I don't know when you started. But what have you seen? Like what trends do you see for 2023 when it comes to launching an online program?
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot more. I'm seeing in the coaching industry in general, like there's been this a bit of a divide, I think, around money. I don't know if you're noticing this. And I think there's a lot of people who are selling on the amount of money that they make each month and that kind of thing as a goal. And I think I'm seeing a bit of a divide in the industry of people who are a bit anti that and people who are a bit for that. And I think my take on it is just jumping back to what we were saying before around phases. And yeah, it's great to aim for these like industry kind of benchmarks, right? But at the same time, you don't really know the full story. Like, how much is that person reinvesting into the business? How much was that person's cost? So I'm seeing a big shift actually in the sales culture in the industry. So not necessarily like the course design in general, but the way that people enroll. And I think I'm seeing a lot more like peer regulation in terms of how people are selling. So it's a little bit more people calling people out in the sense of just being too focused on monetary rewards and things like that. And then actually being a bit more transparent in their sales process and a bit more transparent in their business in general. And I think that's a really good, I think that's real good progress in terms of, you know, shifting the sales culture, because this industry is unregulated. And I very much am of the camp that it's so important to sell from an authentic place, because the way that you sell and the way that you bring people into your programs sets the tone for the energy inside your program. So, you know, if you're employing kind of a lot of scarcity tactics and a lot of kind of convincing and this weird energy, then you're probably going to find weird energy inside your group dynamic. So I'm just seeing a lot more kind of intention and consciousness when people are designing their sales processes. And I really, as a salesperson, I really, really love that. So that's probably the first change. I don't know if you're seeing this in the industry as well.
Oh, definitely, especially that building a connection, the personal connection, the relationship building part, that gets so much bigger. Also because, yeah, of course, video is so huge today on social media.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important. Everybody's craving authenticity in video and wants to get to know the person, basically, that you want to buy from.
Yeah, I think it's the shift from actually we don't have to do it in the way that we've always done it, and people starting to get success from other ways and starting to question why that's always the method taught, right? And I think as someone who's been in sales for 10 years, that a lot of these tactics come from kind of the bro-y Silicon Valley vibe, which I was a part of previously in the previous corporate life. But I think what I'm seeing is this rise of, and I call it female, like feminine leadership, this rise of being able to sell in a way that feels aligned to you and not necessarily having to design the process with these tactics that do work. I'm not going to lie, like they do work, but at the same time, they're not necessary. They're not essential. So I'm loving seeing a lot of creativity in the industry in terms of the sales process. And I'm loving people just kind of leaning into how they want to do it and just experimenting and testing. That's definitely something that I love to see as, you know, as a salesperson.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely where I am right now as well. I just stopped using like Deadline Funnel, all my email sequences that I relied on to launch courses, and just let it flow more.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting to get the balance, because I think the challenge is that people get in their own way in the sales process, right? Like they might love to buy your course, but then fear gets in the way, and actually like it is the best possible thing for them to be on that course. So sometimes having some urgency or having some sort of gentle push in that sense can actually help someone get comfortable to buy. And it benefit them. But at the same time, there's other sides to this where it's too pushy, or it's too, you know, it's just a little bit icky. So it's about finding that balance. And I think in different situations, things have a place. And then in some situations, it's just like, actually, I don't like doing it in that way, so I'm going to try something else and see if that works.
Yes, and it might also depend on your audience, I think, especially when you work with people in the wellness world, or and your clients are maybe people who went through a trauma or who struggle with anxiety. You don't want to really put pressure on them with some really pushy timers, like really shouting out last chunks, and your life will be a misery when you don't join.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we've all seen those launches. where they really, they, the fear of missing out, the FOMO, it's so big.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still feel that still when I teach people how to launch an online course for the first time, it's helpful to have some kind of structured launch plan to follow. Because yeah. otherwise they would end up playing small and just send out one email and feel aligned with that.
Yeah, I
like, couldn't like agree something more. Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I think what I see most with clients and clients who come to me is that, especially if they're launching for the first time, or what I see more often is people who have launched and it flopped, and they've got this launch trauma, I call it launch trauma. And I most of the time, what they're not doing right is they're not selling enough. And people assign this kind of negative connotation to selling, but it doesn't have to be that way at all. And exactly what you said, maybe they sent out one email or two emails, or maybe they put it on their story once. And the thing is, people just, in this busy day and age, people probably didn't even know they had anything for sale, right? So with the right kind of marketing strategy or the right sales strategy that is aligned to that person, they could get completely different results. I think that's probably the biggest thing I do see, people just being scared to even sell at all.
What role do you see social media playing when it comes to launching and selling online courses compared to a few years ago? Has it changed?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. And I think, again, alongside of the theme that we've been talking about, there's more, you can't get away with as much, right? Like, people call people out, and there's kind of this natural sort of, what's the word? Kind of survival of the fittest isn't the right phrase, but you know what I mean? Like, people aren't going to get the success that they would have got previously with these kind of shady tactics. Yes. People are more intelligent to this these days. And I also take the seat that social media is amazing. I think it's amazing. It actually gets such bad rep. And I understand why, because it's built to be addictive and all of these kind of things. But at the same time, when you think about what can happen in terms of, you can find someone who has an incredible solution to help you with this deeply, deeply troubling challenge in your life that's really holding you back in life and making you feel rubbish, and you can stumble upon someone on social media, you can watch their stories, you can binge their content, and you can really feel like, ah, this is the person I want to work with. You can, and without that person even knowing who you are. And I think that's such a wonderful thing. That's such a wonderful buying experience that someone can do that. Because you can't get that as much from a website, from a sales page. So I think social media, when used correctly, when used well and honestly and transparently by the founder, I think it creates an amazing buying experience.
Oh, I 100% agree. Yes, and I think you described it really beautifully, that the opportunity, the chance that you have to really get to know your potential mentor or teacher and learn more about them and their style, and if you really resonate with them. And that's something completely new, right? This is not, yeah. Imagine like 5 years ago when you, I don't know, you wanted to become a life coach and you looked at life coach trainings, and you just had to look like, okay, they have a beautiful website, but you had no ideas about what kind of persons they were, what really was their style, how they talked, if you really resonated yeah. with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And another similar kind of example is the influencer industry. They get a bad rep sometimes these days, especially in Bali. But one of my clients is a popular influencer in the UK, and she's been launching her course. And just working with her made me realize like how wonderful this experience actually is when an influencer is authentic and genuine. And when we think about what that kind of relationship is between them and their followers trust that person so much and enjoy watching their content that this influencer is often putting out for free, so much that they trust their recommendations and maybe they will buy something that the influencer uses. And I think that's quite nice when you compare to buying something from a Facebook ad or something a bit colder, right? Like what did we used to do before? Buy from like a TV ad or something, you know?
I know.
So I just think it brings this nice human element. But as I say, you can, the system gets abused like any system. But on the whole, I think there's some really amazing things that have come out of social media.
Yes, 100%. Are there any other trends that you see when it comes to creating online courses, like how to deliver the content, how to structure it?
I think a need and a desire and demand from the industry in terms of community more than ever. So I think, you know, we've had a history of the last few years of being very a lot of like self-study courses and just creating a passive income course, right? Which is great. And I understand why that really benefits the business owner. But I think especially after COVID, what a lot of people are craving is community and connection with other people, and not necessarily like in-person connection, but connection with people who are like-minded. And I think in the space that both you and I are in, it can be really tricky to find like-minded people, like you were mentioning, right? Like back in your home country, it's hard to find people who are on the same journey. So I think in terms of courses, I've seen the shift towards actually having a lot more emphasis on community and having maybe like a Slack group or Facebook groups. And Kajabi have just released their communities feature, and a lot of the providers are kind of building this in so that it's easier for course creators. And I totally understand why, because when you are surrounded by a group whilst you're on this journey of trying to transform or change in whatever way that is, if you've got other people doing it with you, it's just more joyful, it's just more fun, and you're much more likely to get results because it becomes this community. I think I was listening to a podcast by Seth Godin recently, and he was talking about, you know, why people go to gyms, and actually people go to gyms because of the community and to be someone that goes to the gym, right? And once you start to hang around with the people that go to the gym, you don't want to miss out. So you become someone who goes to the gym, and then you get better results because you're going to the gym. It's similar with a course. And when you build that community factor in, you want to be part of it. So you want to show up, you want to be part of the group, you want to be sharing, you want to be being updated on other people's experiences and transformations. So I love this trend and I love this shift because I think it benefits everyone. And also from a selfish point of view as the business owner, there is probably nothing better, that sense of like reward when my community are like answering each other's questions in the Facebook group, right? And then I'm like jumping in to coach on the questions, and I'm like, oh wow, they've all given each other feedback. That's just so wonderful. So powerful. That's definitely something I'm seeing a big, big shift towards.
Yeah, I love that too. I mean, about programs that I've been in, so it was like the Facebook group was the biggest incentive. And in the way I run my programs as well, always part of it. Yeah. I think it might also depend on the content, right? On the topic. What's like, because you've worked with a lot of people, what's like the weirdest niches for online courses that you've worked with or that you saw having really great successes? Because a lot of people think, yeah, I'm not teaching people how to build an online business or a business, so it's not going to work. I can't make money.
Yeah. I don't think I've really had any like really niche ones. One of my clients I thought was a great idea, where she's still launching at the moment, but she is a wedding planner. And she was like, I really want to make this accessible to everyone, because having a wedding planner is, you know, relatively well, to a lot of people, they can't necessarily afford that luxury, but lots of people get married. So she was like, I'm going to create a course where you can actually just learn the basics of how to plan an amazing wedding from a wedding planner. And you get all of her resources in terms of like supplier lists and things like that. And I just thought that's an amazing idea. And I think on the surface, you'd probably think, oh, how could a wedding planner go digital? How could a wedding planner create a digital business? But that is like a multi-million dollar idea, in my opinion. And I think that could really disrupt that industry. So I think it's not necessarily a bit crazy and out there, but it's an example of where anything can become a course. Everybody has a course inside of them. And anyone can impact another person through creating an online course, even like a wedding planner, which is something predominantly physical. So
that's an amazing idea. I love that. Yeah. Do you do that as well? Like every new person I meet and when they have like a completely different life, like one of the baker or I'm like, I always come up with ideas. Oh, you should do an online business. Sometimes it's a little bit overwhelming for my friends, but I just like, I love it so much.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like when you're in this world, your brain just ticks with ideas and with anything, right?
Yes. I had like one of my housemates actually in Bali, he used to work as a cameraman, but he had some shoulder issues. So it was problematic. So because obviously he has to carry all those heavy cameras. And so he was actually getting into gardening. And so I was like, you have to start an online business about gardening. And we call it the hot gardener because he was a really hot guy, not like that frumpy gardener person that you imagine. And hot because it's tropical gardening. He was completely overwhelmed and he wasn't ready for it. But I still believe that idea.
I love that. Yeah, definitely viral on YouTube, like some sort of YouTube channel. Kind of thing. I could definitely see that.
You have that hot guy surfer dude, right? Naked chest, gardening. Yeah, why not? But I think that's the thing. You're like, even if you aren't in like a business person and you don't really know what you're really good at, look at what hobbies you have or what you're really passionate about and what you're really excited about. And start there. I think there was one example. She built like a $1 million business and her online course, her first online course was about caramelizing apples or something.
I love that. Yeah, I think there's, I mean, one of the trends that I saw a few years ago, people, and there's a few like leaders in the industry now, and, is folding. There's people who have made like courses on folding clothes and folding things in a certain way. And yeah, maybe it was a pandemic thing or something when people were bored at home, but like I've seen some people, I swear there's a pair of girls that like are making like millions of dollars through this. And it just I think a big part of it is entertainment and providing community and this like little niche thing skill. But it's not necessarily just learning the thing. It's like being part of something. So there's so many ways you can create online businesses and courses and deliver value.
What are the biggest mistakes you've seen?
So similar to what I said before, not selling enough, because actually this is a big one that what's the point of creating a course if you can't get anyone in it?
Guilty of that.
Right? Like, yeah, I mean, if you're going to create a course, you have to work on sales mindset and get comfortable selling and understand and learn selling. And I think a lot of people just say, oh, I'm just not a salesperson. I'm just not very good at it. But actually, if you're going to run a business, you have to be a salesperson. So you might as well just start learning and start adopting that identity, right? So that's probably one big mistake that I see. What else do I see? I think I also see a lot of people who get scared about not offering enough value. So they create this like kitchen sink course where they just put absolutely everything into it. And then the problem is with that is actually it doesn't serve the client very well. You might think that you're giving all this amazing value and over delivering and all of this, which is great, but actually what you want is you want to create change, you want to create a transformation, you want the client to get a result. And actually part of that might be making your course optimized in a way that people can finish it and not get overwhelmed. So it's about really thinking about the learner experience and am I packing too much into this, or could I just, instead of trying to get this massive transformation, just break it down a little bit so that people can actually finish the courses. There's a stat that like 5 to 15% of people finish courses. It's so depressing. Like, it's so low. So you really, really, it's important to think about client delivery and the learner experience and how are you going to incentivize and help that person get through the content and finish it. And adding more to it and over delivering often isn't the right answer. It's actually doing an injustice to the client, even though that's not the intention. So that's probably another one.
Yeah, thank you. Definitely 100% agree. It's such a common mistake, especially you also want to share just everything you know. You're afraid that otherwise people are not going to see you as the expert or they don't think it's valuable. And yes, it's really important to always come back. What's the transformation? What do they really need?
Yeah, exactly. I think the other one I would say is that people don't understand their numbers. So something that I always teach is just this really basic average conversion. So 2% of your email list on average converts. And I can't believe how many people don't know this or don't teach this. And this is the thing, I get a lot of people come to me being like, my launch failed. And I'm like, okay, how many people are on your email list? And they tell me, and then I'm like, okay, how many people signed up? And it was roughly 2%. People don't realize the average conversion rate is fairly low. And actually 2% is, it's 1 to 2%. 2% is like more on the
2% is actually good. I mean, it depends how warm your audience is, what a kind of connection you have. I don't think it's really so much about the quantity. But yeah, if you have a really tiny audience, like you have only 100 people on your email list and two people buy, that's an amazing result.
Exactly. Yeah. So I get a lot of people wanting to work one-on-one or wanting to just launch their course straight away and they haven't got an email list, and it's just the wrong order to do things. Because when you, the great thing about knowing numbers is if you know that 2% converts, then you can kind of work backwards, right? You can go, okay, so this means I need to get this amount of people on my email list to have to make whatever I want to make income-wise from this launch. So then you can work on list building, and then you know when roughly you need to launch. And it's just a better informed kind of process. Yes. So that would be another mistake that I see people making, just not like not learning these things or understanding the data behind it.
Thank you. That's been so helpful. Yeah, I really love what you're doing. Students are so lucky to have you. Love the idea of your retreat coming up. And so where can people go to learn more about you and your offers?
Yeah, so I would say I'm most active on Instagram. So you can find me on @SusieClark_. So it's Clark without an E, and it's SUZIE. So many different ways to spell Susie, right? You probably get this all the time spelling your name.
Yeah.
I get all sorts. And then also my website, so femaleleadershipcollective.com, if you want to have a look at any of the programs or anything like that, is the best way to find me. But I would love to chat to anyone. If anyone wants to reach out to me in the DMs, if any of this resonated or got any questions, I love meeting new people and chatting to people. So feel free to reach out.
Thank you. We also added to the show notes and to the posts, so people can reach out to you. Thanks so much for taking the time for being here, Susie. I really appreciate it. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Suzanne. It was so much fun.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Blissful Biz podcast. If you like the show, please leave a review on iTunes. This would mean the world to me. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to never miss a new episode. To learn more about how to work with me one-on-one, my courses and membership, or to get instant access to freebies, workshops, and more, go to susannereiker.com right now. Thanks for tuning in and see you next time. Hey there, interrupting for a short announcement. I'm hosting a virtual bootcamp to help you kickstart your online business from May 6th to May 10th, and I would love to see you there. It's the Make Your First or Next $5,000 online bootcamp, and you can save your spot for this free virtual event when you go to my website, susannereiker.com/bootcamp. That's susannereiker.com/bootcamp. I'm going to go live every day from Monday to Friday with a live training on how to elevate your vision, choose your profitable niche, amplify your content, nail down your signature offer to make your first or next $5,000. I can't believe how freaking fun, valuable, and powerful this virtual event is going to be. You'll get 5 live stream trainings, all of the recordings in case you can't make it live or need to leave early, access to my new community, the Midlife Biz Hive, including tons of additional trainings for you to dive in, the chance to ask any questions in our calls or in the community. It'll be amazing. This event is a real game changer, whether you're just starting out or you've been at it for a while, but feeling a bit stuck around the maybe $2,000 to $3,000 monthly mark. If you're eager for more and ready to figure out the online business puzzle, this is the perfect place to kickstart your journey to bigger and better results.